Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 79 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Joshua Grandison.
And I'm Kayla Hall.
And he's gone. I'll never see him again. And I'll miss him. He didn't want help. I tried to offer to get him help. He didn't want help. He can't help nobody if they don't want help themselves.
The sister of a Rowland County man speaks out after her brother's death in an explosion last night.
Kentucky schools are feeling the impact of sequestration.
And Governor Steve Beshear has announced that he will be absent at an upcoming political event.
In sports, the Reds look to continue their success in Los Angeles tonight.
But Luke has a check of your business world.
Partly cloudy this evening with lows in the mid-60s. The complete forecast is coming up, but first, this news.
People's Bank in Maeslick has reportedly been robbed. The Ledger Independent is reporting police are looking for a small, dark-colored truck occupied by two males, which fled in the direction of Helena on Kentucky 324. The bank robbery suspects are described as possibly white males, one 6 feet tall, weighing about 200 pounds, and the other a little taller and heavier. The heavier one was wearing a two-tone gray shirt with long sleeves, dark baggy pants, and a red hat. The other was wearing a white long-sleeve shirt, black pants, and a red or maroon stripe down the side, a black hat, and tennis shoes. Anyone with any information is encouraged to contact the police.
A Kentucky man accused of killing a 4-year-old child has been taken back to Florida to face the charges. WKYT reports police arrested Keith Wilson at his Bath County home last week on a warrant out of Charlotte County, Florida. Police say Wilson killed Pilar Rodriguez, a case that had been cold for more than a decade. Wilson waived extradition during a hearing last week in Bath County. He had been at the Montgomery County Jail, but authorities from Florida took him into their custody yesterday.
An Ohio man accused of killing his co-worker at a Russell fast food restaurant made his first court appearance yesterday. The Ashland Independent reports 31-year-old Arthur Quigley of Kitts Hill, Ohio, was arraigned in Greenup Circuit Court on charges of murder and tampering with physical evidence. Quigley is accused of killing 40-year-old Mary Dixon of South Shore. Quigley entered a plea of not guilty, and a pretrial date has been set for October 3rd.
An oxygen tank explosion has taken the life of a Rowland County man. Kentucky State Police say 52-year-old Richard Jones passed away after the oxygen tank he was using ignited while smoking cigarettes. Brent Parker, the victim's brother-in-law, is the one who found Jones. He spoke with WKYT.
He was laying on the steps. Really, nobody could do anything anybody could do, you know, as far as, because, you know, we didn't know how bad his injuries were or anything like that. His clothes were still, what he had left was still smoldering, you know. We finished putting fire out.
Jones's family adds that this is actually the fourth time a tank has exploded as a result of his smoking. And while they are shocked he is dead, they are not surprised by how it happened. He was pronounced dead Wednesday night at St. Clair Regional Medical Center.
Contractors have scheduled the replacement of a damaged steel beam on Ashland's 12th Street Bridge for the weekend of August 9th through the 12th. Barring unforeseen circumstances, the Ben Williamson Memorial Bridge should be opened again on that Monday. The original repair completion date was set for July 31st, however, that date was pushed back as work was restricted to weekends to ease the impact on traffic. Alan Blair is with District 9 of Kentucky's Department of Highways.
Our first available opportunity to get both the traffic control situated on the Ohio side as well as working with a railroad flagman available to work with the train traffic below the bridge, the first chance that that could occur was that weekend of August 9th. We'd like to have seen it done quicker than that.
The bridge was shut down after a truck struck the Ohio approach span, bending and twisting a steel support.
An official with Kentucky's Department of Education says the Commonwealth has lost about $26 million in federal grants as the result of budget sequestration. Charles Harmon is director of the budget division. He says the cuts include more than $8 million to special education.
Most of the time, districts use these funding for staff. It's people in classrooms. So that's the impact. We're going to have fewer teachers with special education funding to deal with our students, to deal with that population of students.
Harmon says funds for teacher training and professional development have been cut too. He testified Thursday before House and Senate members of the Appropriations and Revenue Committee.
A state lawmaker from Jefferson County who serves on the Senate Education Committee says he is personally offended by the cuts to education forced by the federal budget sequester. Democrat Gerald Neal says Kentuckians should be expressing their collective displeasure at the state's congressional delegation.
And it clearly takes us back, not forward. And clearly it's a political ploy that's taking place on that level. It is outrageous.
Neal says the budget cuts hurt Kentucky and especially the people who receive the services being curtailed.
A northeastern Kentucky state lawmaker is looking forward to the time when the legislature finally gets its chance to reform the state's tax system. State Representative Jill York of Grayson says she's curious to see the final recommendations of the governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on tax reform. According to the Republican, the Commonwealth's tax codes are outdated, and it's critical for the future of Kentucky's economy that they be fixed.
Our tax code is antiquated. Our tax code does not allow the flexibility for the changing economy and the shift from more manufacturing jobs to perhaps more service-based industries that we have here in Kentucky.
The General Assembly is expected to take up the sticky matter of tax reform in January when it becomes its 2014 session.
Governor Beshear will not attend the Fancy Farm political picnic in Graves County next weekend. The governor tells Insight Cable's Pure Politics he has pressing business to attend to.
I've got some conflicts from economic development situations that I'm working on. As a matter of fact, we're probably going to have an announcement down that way toward the end of that week, and then I've got to go right into some other meetings to try to bring more jobs to Kentucky. But I'm looking forward to next year because that's really the main event when all of the elections are going to take place.
The governor says he loves Fancy Farm, but whenever he has an opportunity to create jobs for Kentucky, he needs to take it.
Senator Rand Paul says the United States is flaunting its own law if it continues to send aid to Egypt after the country's elected president was deposed by the military. The Kentucky Republican made the charge Thursday during a hearing of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Our law says that when a coup occurs, you know, the aid ends. So we can debate whether it's a good idea to end, and you're welcome to have opinions on whether it's a good idea to have aid or not to have aid. But the law is the law. And if we decide that we're above the law, it's very hard for us to be preaching to the rest of the world about having the rule of law.
Paul says the U.S. undermines its moral authority around the world if it doesn't respect the rule of law, but expects other countries to do so.
With a Lexington Urban County Council vote on the Euclid-Kroger expansion on the docket soon, some neighborhood residents are mounting a campaign to stop the plans from being approved. KPR's Josh James has more.
The wall on this side, on the marquee side of the building, will run from the corner all the way down there at the stop sign, all the way up.
Neighborhood resident Kate Savage outlines the dimensions of the new proposed grocery on Euclid. The project, dubbed Fort Kroger by opponents, is drawing protests from those who see the 27,000-square-foot expansion as overkill. Savage is the woman behind a crop of yellow signs calling on the council to say no to the plans.
We're not at all happy about the change that this store will make in this neighborhood. This is basically a shopkeeper, mom-and-pop, small, personalized shopping center.
But other shoppers are welcoming the Kroger proposal, which would add a kitchen section, drive-through pharmacy, and rooftop parking. Area resident Bill Fortune spoke in favor of the development at a planning commission meeting on the requested zone changes.
I try to do as much shopping as humanly possible in the Chevy Chase area. And I do that because I consider myself now an urban dweller. I do not want to have to go to the suburbs to buy something.
The council is slated to vote on the plans August 13th. For Kentucky Public Radio, I'm Josh James.
While cockfighting is illegal in all 50 states, Kentucky is one of 10 where participation is just a misdemeanor. But the Commonwealth may be in for a crackdown. The head of the Humane Society of the U.S. calls Kentucky's cockfighting law anemic. Wayne Passell says he hopes the Farm Bill, which is still being debated on Capitol Hill, will up the ante against the blood sport.
The federal provision in the Farm Bill, in the House bill and the Senate bill, to crack down on spectators and people bringing children to dogfights and cockfights really is going going to do very, very important work in Kentucky given the prevalence of this activity.
The Farm Bill, as currently proposed, would close a loophole in the law, allowing for the arrest of participators and spectators, and those who bring children would be prosecuted as felons as well. The bill is far from a done deal, however, as many oppose the Fed's further involvement in animal fighting.
State Auditor Adam Edelin says Health First Bluegrass pre-selected a project manager for the $12 million Southland Clinic project and has allowed that manager to continue work despite a conflict of interest. An audit requested by Lexington Mayor Jim Gray shows that developer Tim Meems, ownership of 10% of the property, makes it improbable that he could remove any personal consideration when making decisions as property manager. Edelin says he hopes the report will present a turning point in the project.
This report is an alarm bell for the whole community that unless we get our act together and we get Health First House in order, it could jeopardize the success and viability of a $12 million publicly paid for project.
In response to the audit, Health First Board Chairman Thomas Lester, along with the Building Committee Chairman, wrote that beyond minor and potential findings, there were no concerns or issues that resulted in any improprieties. Still, Mayor Gray says the findings are serious and demands action if Health First is to ensure that the federal grant money is utilized.
After 3 hours of a special session late yesterday evening regarding a new alcohol ordinance, the Grayson City Council has spoken. MSPR's Chase Johnson has the story.
The Ashland Independent reports the Grayson City Council passed the first reading of the city's statute that will permit alcohol sales. Those buying by the drink will pay a 4% regulatory fee, while those purchasing packaged alcohol would pay 6%. The subsection that addressed regulatory fees on gross sales in the businesses that sell alcohol by the drink was struck from the ordinance for the time being. Mayor George Steele argued that the section should stay with a lower percentage in order to help pay for much-needed amenities for the city. The section was removed from the ordinance and it passed by a vote of 4-2. City Attorney Reed Glass expects the State Department of Alcohol Beverage Control to allow 2 liquor store licenses within the city. The second reading of the ordinance will be held on July 29th. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio News, I'm Chase Johnson.
The Kentucky Lottery has topped last year's sales record with more than $846 million in revenue for the fiscal year. The lottery said Friday that the sales surpassed the previous record of $823.5 million set last year, an increase of 2.8%. Lottery Chief Financial Officer Howard Klein says strong sales of $5 and $20 scratch-offs helped boost the year's revenue to a record number. Total scratch-off sales were $522 million. The sales also set a record for proceeds returned to the state, with $223.8 million for scholarships and grant programs funded by the lottery. Cash prizes were also up from last year, with $495 million paid out compared to $459 million in 2012.
And finally today, West Virginia officials say recent heavy rains are resulting in a barrage of rock slides and mudslides. The Charleston Gazette reports that state highway repair crews were on the scene of 3 major slides around the state Thursday. Division of Highways spokesman Brent Walker says crews worked to clear a huge rock slide that blocked U.S. Route 60 about 1 mile west of Cedar Grove in Kanawha County. Tons of rock broke loose high above the 2-lane highway at about 10 a.m. and completely covered both lanes. Road crews were also on their second day trying to clear a massive slide on West Virginia Route 10 in Logan County. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the counties of Carter, Greenup, and Martin. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms late. Lows in the mid-60s. Chance of rain is 40%. Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the upper 70s. Chance of rain 50%. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, then clearing late. Lows around 60, chance of rain is 40%. Sunday, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-70s. Sunday night will be mostly clear, lows in the mid-50s. Currently in Ashland, it is 82 degrees. In Flemingsburg, 80. Winchester, 79 degrees. Lexington, 80 degrees. In Inez, it's 83 degrees. And in Moorhead, it is 79 degrees.
It is 4:45, and you are tuned in to Mountain Edition here on Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm Joshua Grandison, sitting in with Kayla Hall. And we are just tickled pink to have you with us this Friday afternoon as we get set to greet the weekend. On our feature segment this afternoon, we have commentary from Moorhead State University professor Dr. John Modaff. He is once again returning to the field.
We're back outside this week appreciating traffic going by and wondering what we do without other people. The truth about people is indeed stranger than fiction. Consider several recent social situations we face and how unlikely it would be that anyone writing fiction would make this stuff up. In the beginning was Anthony Weiner, when for a moment we saw the people and the Congress rise up and approach civility, demanding that master of sexting take his wares out of the House. An amazing thing, Weiner's ejection from the House was, when we consider his party, and also some of his predecessors, who included none other than Mr. Clinton. You remember Mr. Clinton? He did not use social media to conduct his dictation to a young woman. He had facilities, and he was facile, getting out of everything, including a conviction for perjury, to reinvent himself to the tune of making $17 million giving speeches just last year. No one could make this stuff up. Anyway, Weiner is now neck and neck with opponents cruising for mayor of New York City. His wife, who clearly has spent way too much time hanging around with the too forgiving Hillary Clinton, is standing by her man. No word on cookies or muffins. Now here's a weird one. On February 26, 2012, a killing took place in Sanford, Florida. You know the one? That sort of thing happens about 16,000 times in the U.S. each year. One person kills another one in a situation where that was only one of the possible outcomes. Sometimes we call it murder. Sometimes we call it something else. In every case, someone is dead and someone else has to live with having killed them. But what is so strange about that one case out of Sanford is how it obscured the other killings of that night. On average, one American kills another about every half hour. Every 4 years, we kill another Vietnam War's worth of casualties. We keep fighting this war over and over. What I would love to hear the president say, if ever he could get off the non-issue of race in the Martin case, is a blunt question to Americans. He could use his charisma, look us in the eye, and ask, why are you killing one another like this? And to Chicago, his hometown, he might ask, why are you killing one another faster than anyone else? If he does not have the gravitas to talk to the people who need to hear those questions, no one does. The stories we've been enjoying so far today pale next to news out of our Department of Education. Like more than 70 other federal agencies, the Department of Education has a huge budget, a staff in the thousands, and lots of everything to do, whatever it is they do. But they have something else their compatriot departments enjoy. The Federal Department of Education has the capacity to deploy a SWAT team. As John Whitehead put it, quote, federal agencies, having nothing whatsoever to do with national defense, now see the need for their own paramilitary units, close quote. He explained back in 2011 that agencies that established their own offices of inspector general opened the way to SWAT. Yes, SWAT teams have been deployed to do Department of Education business. You can't make this stuff up, but what is even more distressing than the stories of SWAT teams replacing a good SWAT on the behind in education is that people seem not the least bit surprised. I'm John Modaff.
Dr. John Modaff is an associate professor of speech at Moorhead State University. The time is 4:48, and Chase Scott has been keeping a check of your sports world. He's up in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR is provided in part by Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky. Each day, around 2,000 vehicles are made at the Georgetown plant. A factory tour gives you an insightful look at what goes into building the Avalon, Venza, and Camry. You can ride a guided tram car and see the process from start to finish, including a glimpse of giant cold-rolled steel coils that automatically presses shape into doors, hoods, and roofs. Tours are Monday through Friday, and reservations are highly recommended. ToyotaGeorgetown.com.
One down and three more to go. Good evening, reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Chase Scott. The Cincinnati Reds continue an important road trip tonight in Los Angeles as they square off for Game 2 in the series with the Dodgers. The Reds came out strong last night in their effort to pull out a 5-2 win behind starter Matt Latos's 7.5-strong innings, which included 4 strikeouts while only giving up 1 earned run. The Reds also received help from Jay Bruce's 6-inning 2-run dinger, which helped put away Los Angeles. Latos says
besides the jet lag of traveling out west, he felt comfortable while he was on the mound.
You know, I was able to go deep into the game, and that helps to help out the bullpen. Like I said, I made pitches when I needed to. Got a ground ball double play with Adrian. And then jammed a lot of people today, too.
We've got a really good team, so just pitching's coming together, hitting's coming together, defense is playing, so... I mean, when you have a lineup like we have and pitching staff and everything that we have, we're swinging the bat good. We're going to win a good amount of ball games.
The Reds will have 5-9 Homer Bailey on the bump tonight, while the Dodgers will counter with 9-6 Clayton Kershaw. First pitch from Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles is scheduled for 10:10 p.m. It's official that one Chicago Cub will be heading back to New York and putting on his pinstripes. For more on the story, we turn to MSPR's Jared Wesley.
Alfonso Soriano started his career for the Bronx Bombers in 1999, but was shipped to Chicago after the 03 season. He'll now return to the Yankees to help bolster the offense, which is mightily struggling at this point in the season. The Yanks haven't had a home run in the last 7 games, which is a streak they haven't been on since the 1984 season. They also have gone 26 games without a home run from a right-handed hitter. Soriano is batting .254 with 17 home runs and 51 RBIs this season, and is heated up in July with 8 homers and 16 RBIs. Soriano's contract will expire after next season. For MSPR Sports, I'm Jared Wesley reporting.
The Lexington Legends have another tough battle tonight with the South Atlantic Northern League leader in the West Virginia Power. The Legends split last night's doubleheader at Whitaker Bank Ballpark, winning the first game 3-2 and dropping the second 3-4. Lexington will have 4-7 Miguel Almonte on the mound tonight, while the visiting Power will toss 5-5 John Cuchino. First pitch is scheduled for 7:05 at Whitaker Bank Ballpark. Morehead State baseball coach Mike McGuire is already looking forward to the start of the Eagles' fall practices, with 20 newcomers joining MSU's 15 veterans on the Allen Field Diamond. In the next several weeks, McGuire says there will be plenty of competition for key roles on his ball club, and he admits he likes that.
It keeps guys hungry and keeps guys striving to get better every day. I think, you know, they're going to realize that, hey, I got to stay after it. I might be the starter right now, but I want to continue to be a starter, and there's going to be somebody sitting next to them that's going to be pushing them. And so I think that makes for a lot less practices that there's lulls in, you know, and you know, hopefully makes guys, you know, bring their lunch pail every day, you know, wanting to get better.
And getting better is the goal for the baseball Eagles, who finished last season at 16-40. The Cincinnati Bengals are hoping for a little less drama on their second day of preseason practices. Head coach Marvin Lewis says all-pro wide receiver A.J. Green is doing well after twisting his left knee yesterday while going down to catch a pass.
We'd rather they all stay on their feet, though. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather have an incomplete pass. But it is one way for me to get him out of practice. So I'd rather pull him out rather than let me see him go through a dramatic fall.
Green was removed from the rest of Thursday's practice as a precautionary measure. In another note, the Bengals say right tackle Andre Smith should begin practicing again on Sunday. He sat out the team's offseason workouts and OTAs because of personal issues, and he's also been dealing with a calf injury. Like the team's players, Morehead State football coach Rob Tenure says he and his staff are using the last bit of their summer vacation to make sure they're fully prepared for the start of preseason camp. And Tenure says there's no shortage of things for he and his assistant coaches to do.
Playbook preparation, any adjustments, probably have a little bit of, probably a number of breakdowns to do from 2012 that are opponents that we played last year will be playing this year. So just those type of things and trying to tinker around a little bit, offense, defense, in the kicking game and bring some new things to the table that we may have gotten from the time we ended spring practice to now that we think will benefit our football program.
And the MSU football team's preseason camp begins on August 4th at Jane Stadium. And finally, Morehead State Athletic Director Brian Hutchinson isn't worried about being overloaded. In addition to his duties at MSU, Hutchinson was recently named the president of the Football Championship Subdivision Athletic Directors Association. He already serves on both the NCAA's Division I Football Championship Committee and its Football Issues Committee as well. All of that puts a lot on his plate, but he's not concerned about keeping up with everything.
We have a couple of in-person opportunities every year, and those are things that I've been involved with for a long time. So it might mean that I have to maybe go out somewhere an extra day on the front end of a meeting or, or maybe stay a day after on the back end of a meeting, but certainly no. It'll be a little bit more work just in corresponding with some folks, but I'm not concerned about the time commitment.
Hutchinson has been MSU's athletic director since 2004. That's a look into the world of sports. Have a great weekend. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Chase Scott.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Season tickets for Morehead State football, soccer, and volleyball are now on sale, as well as single game tickets for football. Single event tickets for soccer and volleyball will be available on game days. More information on single game or season tickets is available from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. After being down as much as 150 points earlier, the Dow Industrials came all the way back to finish slightly ahead as the blue chip average had a gain of 3.22 at 15,558.83. The S&P 500 was up 1.4 at 1691.65, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 7.98 at 3613.16. New York Stock Exchange breadth was 15 to 14 negative, so the broader market was weak today. Gold finished with a gain of 0.1%, while oil was down almost 1%. And, of course, earnings continue to be in focus, and today Amazon shares were lower after the online retailer posted a surprise loss. And Zynga's stock sank after the online gaming company issued a weak outlook for the third quarter and said it's not going to pursue online gambling in the United States. And Expedia was the biggest drag on both the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 as shares of the online travel company plunged as much as 20% intraday on a worse-than-expected earnings report. In non-earnings-related news, Activision Blizzard surged more than 20% after the maker of games such as World of Warcraft and Call of Duty said it was actually acquiring most of the stock that's currently held by French company Vivendi. Starbucks shares rose after the coffee merchant delivered better-than-expected quarterly earnings and sales. And Halliburton stock rose nearly 4% after the Justice Department said the oilfield services firm would plead guilty to destroying computer test results that had been sought as evidence in the Deepwater Horizon disaster, obviously much less of a fine and penalty than had been expected. And Tesla Motor shares gained after Deutsche upgraded the electric car maker. And in economic news, the University of Michigan and Thomson Reuters said a key measure of consumer sentiment rose to 85.1 in July, which is the highest level in 6 years. Overseas, European markets ended mostly lower, though shares of Pearson and LVMH rose after the companies posted better-than-expected earnings. In Asia, Japan's benchmark Nikkei index fell by 3% as the yen strengthened. Japan's inflation turned positive for the first time in a year, and of course that's a sign that the Prime Minister's new policies are taking hold in terms of trying to increase overall prices in Japan. And the performance on the Chinese indices were more muted as Hong Kong's Hang Seng index rose by 0.2% and the Shanghai Composite declined by 0.5%. Turning out to individual stocks, it was Ashland Incorporated down $1.66 at $86.79, CSX down 28 cents at $24.68, AK Steel up 10 cents at $3.61, Marathon Petroleum down 14 cents at $71.91, and Arch Coal was up 16 cents to finish at $4.17. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Taking a look at your weather forecast, tonight partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms late, lows in the mid-60s, chance of rain is 40%. It's 82 degrees in Ashland, 80 in Flemingsburg, 79 degrees in Winchester, 80 in Lexington, 83 in Inez, and 79 degrees in Moorhead.
And that does it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from MSPR staff Chuck Mraz, Tanner Boyd, Chase Johnson, Chase Scott, Jared Wesley, Asa Hosada, and as always, Dan Conti. From KPR, Josh James. Our feature segment this afternoon was provided by University Professor Dr. John Modaff. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, and translator W202VH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Kayla Hall and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Joshua Grandison for Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is up next. It's 5 o'clock.